I tell you what I want to talk to you about tonight. I want to spend a little time talking about something that we're all interested in. And all of us have been exposed to different philosophies of what it takes to get this, and that is happiness. You know, Jesus one time made a statement. He said, "I came that you would not only have life, but that you would have life," what'd he say?
Have it more abundantly.
More abundantly. Okay. Now, in essence, what he was saying when he said that was, he was saying, "I want you not only, I came so not only that you'd be alive, but that so that you'd be have or have a life, but that you'd have a happier life." That's really what the more abundantly part is all about. But you know, there's a lot of philosophies out there about what, you know, what constitutes the road to happiness and so forth. I mean, if you go to the library or to a bookstore or online, you'll find just as many books and philosophies of what is the road to happiness as there are people to have an opinion about that. Several months ago back in Ohio County where I preach, I did a little study on this and did some research on it. I wanted to share a little bit of that with you guys tonight in the time that we've got. And wave at me or something when we start getting close to time. I'll be like the preacher said to there's a little girl in the audience, and she was asking her mom about what was going on in the service, and preacher got up there and started preaching, and he loosened his tie up. And a little girl said, "Mom, what's he doing that for?" I said, "Well, he's getting ready to preach." And a few minutes later, he rolled his sleeves up. And she said, "Well, Mama, what did he do that for?" So what does that mean? And said, "Well, that means he's really getting ready to bear down on it." You know, and every time he'd do something, she'd say, "Mom, what's that mean?" And she, "Well, that means this, that means that." Well, directly, he took his watch off and sat down in front of him. And the little girl said, "Mom, what's that mean?" She said, "Not a thing in the world." So, anyway, I tell you what I want to do tonight, and we're going to try to go through this as quick as I can, because I tell you what I would like to do is if I got time, and we'll see how time holds out, but if I got time, I'd like to contrast what it is to be on the road to happiness and what gets us there versus some things that can hold us back from that. And so we'll just see how it goes. But the lesson that we're going to talk about is 5 secrets of happy people. Okay, 5 secrets of happy people. And by the way, I say secrets, maybe that's not the best word to use for that, because the fact of it is that I doubt if very many of these are secrets from you. But the fact of it is that I think there's a lot of not only research to back this up, but also good old common horse sense that when you hear it, you say, "You know what that does? That just fits. That just makes a lot of sense. You can't hardly argue with that." But let's just, and these, by the way, these aren't necessarily in any order, but the most important thing that I found out about happy people in trying to do this research was this, and this may surprise you. Happy people are happy because they chose to be happy. Here's what they found out doing research. 50% of the stuff that's going on in your life, for example, where you were born and who your mom and daddy was and where you go to school and a lot of these kinds of things, things going on in your life even, are in many cases things that you're not going to have a whole lot of control over. They just are what they are. Those things are, and some of it's going to be genetic, or it may have to do with demographics or whatever, but the bottom line of it is, about half of the things going on in your life you can't do much about. Now, that's the bad news, but here is good news. Now, here's the good news. The good news is, there's the other half, that other 50%, that you are going to have some control over. And maybe all the control over. And one of the biggest things that you absolutely have control over is you have control over your own attitude. Nobody can control that but you. Now, let me give you some examples, real quick examples from the Bible. How many of you remember the story of when Paul went to Philippi, and he got up there and he wasn't very well received? As a matter of fact, there were some people there that really didn't appreciate some things he had to say. And the long story short of it was, they took him and his companion, they threw him into the prison after they beat the stuffings out of him. They had him locked up in shackles in there with their feet locked up in this prison. And so here they were. Now, Paul wasn't from Philippi. And in them days, Philippi was a long, long way, you know, relatively speaking, from where he was from. So he's far from home. You know, he's in bad physical shape because, I mean, they just beat him to within an inch of his life. We know from some other writings of Paul that he had what he called a thorn in the flesh. Now, I don't know exactly what that was. A lot of people have speculated on it. I'm not going to. All I know is this. It was something that made his life unpleasant and that he had asked God to take away, and God said no. And so he had it there. He had it there that night. He's in Philippi. You know, and so he had some. What I presume is some kind of a physical issue that was going on that made his life that much more difficult, and all these other things going on. But here he was, him and his companion, and they're in the jail. And what are they doing at midnight when this earthquake comes and opens the doors of these cells and sets them free? Do you remember? Do you remember what they were doing? What were they doing? They were singing. Of all things, they were singing. Now, you know, I'm not saying that you can't sing when you're not happy. I mean, that's possible. You can. But I think it implies something about his attitude in that situation. I think it implies that Paul was making the best of a difficult situation and doing it, here's the key, successfully. He was doing it successfully. Paul had chosen to be happy. Here's what they found out in research. You know, we think that, and we've been taught that you smile because you're happy, and you laugh because you're happy, and that's true. We do, okay. But here's the trick to it. They found out that you can make it go the other way. You can smile, and you can laugh, and you will become happier. It'll lift your spirits. And so you can choose to take ownership of your feelings to a certain extent, to a great extent. And you can choose to be within your circumstances to lift your spirits up and to recognize that you've got a lot of things to be happy about. One of the things we'll get to a little bit later on is, you know, we're kind of counting our blessings a little bit and think about some of the things that you and I have that we really ought to be happy about, okay? But anyway, for the moment, just suffice to say, each morning, if you want to be happier for that day, something as simple as this, and I promise you it does work. This isn't just what, you know, self-help gurus and people like that have said. It actually works. If you'll get up each morning and recognize that, and you're talking about counting the best, let's just take some basic things here. You know, if you can get up in the morning and stand up out of your sick bed, see, a lot of people can't. If you can stand up in the morning and put your own clothes on and go to your kitchen and get you some food, and they're not feeding it to you through a tube in your arm, right? You're better off than a whole lot of folks. And you got something to be happy about. If you're not laying in a hospital bed somewhere, you're better than a lot of folks are. You got something to be happy about. If you got the least little bit of money in the bank, you're better off than about 99% of the people in the world who don't have any. You got something to be happy about. If you drove here to church tonight instead of walk, you're better off than most of the people in the world, because they if they'd had to, wherever they'd come to them, if they'd wanted to been here, they'd had to walk. But you didn't. So, you know, and we could just go on and on, but you get the idea. The point of it is that sometimes we get down on our circumstances. And, you know, I remember a fellow years and years ago by the name of Norman Vincent Peale, and he wrote a pretty influential book. You might remember what it was called. What was it? The Power... The Power of Positive Thinking. Well, I think that's a great book with a great title, but I got another take on that. I'm going to share it with you. It's called The Power of Negative Thinking. Now, let me tell you what I mean when I say The Power of Negative Thinking. Years ago, I had moved to North Carolina. And I got over there, and it was the best job I ever had in my life. I was making more money. I was living in the better accommodations. I had a nice office. Everything was going in the right direction for me, and materially and spiritually in other ways as well. But anyway, I had so much to be happy about and thankful for. Well, one day, and I don't know what was going on. I don't remember. That's how little it was and how insignificant. But one day I came in, and I sat down and had a big old nice leather sofa and sat in. I'm sitting there watching this big screen TV, in the cool of the air conditioning and all this kind of stuff. Kick back. And they had a special on TV about the Coast Guard. And I watched, and they were talking about how they interdict drugs coming into the United States, and they're protecting our borders and blah, blah, blah. And then they talked about how that there was some boat people that was kind of trying to come up from the Caribbean and trying to get to Florida. Now, stay with me now. There's a point here. Some of these boat people were loaded down in these little tiny boats. They had a boat about the size of this one that y'all got up here mocked up in front. And there was 500 people in that boat. You say, well, no way. You must have misremembered, because they couldn't get that many. Oh, yes. They got, and you say, well, but how was they even afloat? That's just it. They barely were. This thing was all the way sunk down till this was just at the very waterline. And as the Coast Guard cutter came alongside, the thing tipped over. And I watched on TV as a man who, I would have guessed him all probably in his early 50s, although it's hard to tell a lot of times with him. But anyway, this man didn't have nothing. He didn't have nothing. And all he wanted was a chance to get to the United States, where he thought that he could have a better life. And I watched on TV that day as that man drowned. Watched him. And then it hit me real, real hard. What a sorry ingrate I am. Because I've been sitting there moaning and groaning about my day and how it wasn't going so good. And here I'm watching this man drown trying to get to the United States just so he could be in the same country with me. And if he'd have got here, he didn't know anybody. And if he'd have got here, he wouldn't have had nothing. If he'd have got here, all he would have been a poor immigrant who couldn't even speak the language. And that's all he was asking for. And I was groaning about my day. So the power of negative thinking kicked in, and I started thinking, hey, you know what? I mean, after I, kind of reconciled myself, that's bad that happened to him, but now I can be thankful, because now I can realize that I can be glad that wasn't me. And that the Lord has blessed me so much, I don't have anything to be sad about. I felt better from that time on, and I think we ought to. If you don't feel good about your situation, you need to get out more. You need to look around more. You need to realize that you're in the lucky 1% of the population on planet Earth who has got it made. Who's got it made. One of the greatest things that the Lord has done in my life is He's allowed me an opportunity to go overseas. I love to go overseas and do mission work when I can. But one of the reasons why I love to do that so much is because every time I go, I come back to the United States so thankful that God has seen fit to bless me to be an American. We're lucky. Amen?
Amen.
We're lucky. And I see these people and how they have to live in some of these places. And, I'm thankful that God has seen fit to give me so much that I don't deserve. And I know I don't. Here's another thing I noticed about happy people. And this is something that came out of this study. Happy people, and I'll put it this way, facetiously a little bit maybe, but happy people are annoyingly persistent and optimistic. You just, as old saying goes, you can't keep a good man down. You can't keep happy people down. The happy people are happy all the time. And here's the thing. Happy people fail. They have setbacks. They get disappointed. They suffer tragedy. They don't get their way all the time. They get sick. They get in car wrecks. Their family has difficult situations and things that they have. Their life is not different than our life in any way, except for one. Except for one. And that is, once again, back to point number one, they have chosen to be happy. And they believe that no matter what's going on in their life today, and however bad it may look right now, it's going to be better later on. You know, I think about some of the slaves and how they managed to get through the times that they did before the Lord saw fit to liberate them, and what it must have been like. And I got to, you know, I think one of the things that a mentality that emerged from that was, and that I think it had to, and really it's a survivalist mentality. You know, we think of survivalism in the United States in terms of, you know, people with guns and hoarding, supplies and things like this, and building a retreat in the mountains or something like that. Well, you know, just being alive is an exercise in survival, you know, every day that we do. And I think about how that there is a survival value in persistence and in optimism and in recognizing that that things are going to get better later on, and that no matter what happens, that we've got a God that's promised us that He's going to take care of us. So, you know, Jesus said it this way, Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. He said, and I'm going to paraphrase here for just a minute. He said, you put God first, and you're not going to have to worry about all these other things that the Gentiles have to worry about. Right? Remember how he said it in the King James? But seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things, now the things he was talking about, our food and clothes and shelter and so on. All right. He said, all these things will be added unto you. So that's a guarantee from God. Okay, we just need to have the faith that when God makes a promise, He's going to make good on His promise. And He will. I think about the little nursery rhyme we learned as children about the itsy bitsy spider. Remember the itsy bitsy spider? You know, there was a, I'm trying to think of this guy's name, some of you, Robert Fulghum. He wrote a book called Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Well, one of these days I'm going to write a book about the Itsy Bitsy Spider. It's going to be Everything I Need to Know I Learned from the Itsy Bitsy Spider. You know, because the Itsy Bitsy Spider teaches us a lesson about overcoming adversity. And he gets washed down, but he doesn't stay down. He gets back up and he goes on. And that's all we can do in life anyway. And you think about this. If God wanted to, okay, think about this just for a minute. If God wanted to, He could rain down gold coins out of the sky to cover you up. He could whisk you away to live in a Hollywood mansion. He could, he could take you from whatever you look like now to whatever you want to look like, be like a movie star or whatever. But you know what? For whatever reason, God has seen fit to give us the situation that we've got right now. And I can't help but think that if it was good for me to have those things or to be those things, God would have done that already. He's not withholding things from me that are good for me. Jesus said He never would do that. Jesus said if He withholds something from us, it's because He's determined that's not going to be good for us. And so He's doing it for our benefit, not for our hurt. But it takes a certain measure of spiritual maturity on our part before we're going to come to that acceptance or that understanding. I think this crowd is up to the task. Let me tell you another one. Happy people, this is a funny one. Happy people are unselfish. Now, that seems strange to me, because you would think that if a person's really going to truly be happy, what he's going to need to do is he's going to need to concentrate all his efforts on his own personal happiness. Right? That seems logical, doesn't it? If you want to do something, you've got to put all your efforts into getting that thing. But that really is just the opposite of what we just said a minute ago about what Jesus taught. Jesus didn't say if you want food and shelter and clothing and so forth, then seek that first. On the contrary, he said, if you want to make sure that you've got that secured, put God first, and then these things will follow. Now, that's a little ironic, I thought. Let me share something with you. According to a recent article in the Wall Street Journal, teen suicide is at an all-time high. It's at an all-time high. Now, the irony of this is that our young people have more money and more free time and more material blessings, clothes, more food than they can eat, less responsibility, less work than they've ever had. You think that the conditions that prevail right now with our young people, this ought to, this is a blessed generation in terms of every material blessing. And yet, our young people are more miserable than any previous generation, including those that have had to go off to war. I just think that's awful strange. Why is that, do you think, that our young people are so blessed but so miserable? Well, I got a theory about that. I think that it's because that they've been taught from birth that life is all about them. Happy people, they don't focus on themselves much. You ever see an interview with a person that's really, really old? I'm talking about 100 years old, 110 years old. There's more and more of them out there all the time. I'll tell you something I've noticed in these interviews, because I watch these people. I want to know what is the secret. I don't know if I want to live that long or not, but if I do, if I'm going to, I know I'm going to. There's something about them, and it's something beyond simply good genetics. There's something there that these people are doing to live to such extreme longevity. And I think one of the common denominators, I'm not saying it's the only one, but one of the common denominators that's occurred to me when I listen to these people and what they have to say is that these people, they don't worry much. They're people that are optimistic. I mentioned that and how that they're persistent. These people are. But one of the things that strikes me about these people is that they're also people that are that they're unselfish. You notice these people, and I'll tell you what you'll notice about them. They volunteer. There'll be some old lady, she's 95 years old. She's still going down there as a candy striper to the hospital every day. It'll be some old man, and he'll still grow a garden, and he'll still carry garden vegetables around and give them away to his friends. Right? You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Right? These are people that are living their lives for the benefit of other people, and the irony of it is the one that's benefiting the most is them. Now, you can take that, turn that just around. Our young people are living their lives all for themselves. And the ones that they're failing the most is themselves. They're making themselves miserable by doing that. Interesting thing. You'd think somebody would have mentioned that. Wait a minute. Hey, I forgot about that. Yeah, there's something in there about that. You might want to read up on that. Number four. Happy people have a purpose. They have goals. And not only do they have goals, but they're moving constantly towards those goals, whatever they may be. And it's not general goals necessarily. It's towards specific things that they want to do. How many of you ever saw that Bill Murray movie, Groundhog Day? Anybody? Okay. Well, for the benefit of those of you that didn't see it, what the essence of the movie was about is about a man that... whose life was pretty well out of whack. And long story short of it was that the universe, God, whoever, decided that he was going to have to repeat that day, just like failing the grade in school. He's going to have to repeat that day, exactly that same day, and with the only thing being different is what he did. He's going to have to repeat that day over and over and over again until he finally got it right. And that movie's kind of, for at least for me, it's kind of become a metaphor for the existence that so many people live that's like that, where it's just, you know, every day seems exactly the same. It's all, it's just monotonous, and all they're doing is they're getting up and they're going and they're you go through your toiletry routine, and then you go to work, and then you do everything, you come home, you got stuff to do there, and go to bed, and then turn around and get up and tomorrow and do exactly the same thing, do it all over again. And the thing about it is that after X number of years of doing that, and we wake up morning and we look at this face in the mirror that's there, and we say, who is that old person looking out of my mirror? Who is that? And what happened to my life? Remember what James said about our lives? Says like a little vapor. Said appears for just a little while and it vanishes away. Now, none of us know how many years the Lord's going to bless us with. And I don't know how many He's going to bless me with. I know this though. If I just live to be about an average age of people of my demographic, I'm on the last half of it. Whatever we're going to do, the Bible teaches us that we need to do it with a sense of purpose. I think about what Solomon said. Now, Solomon's one of the wisest people that ever lived. He didn't always behave in the wisest way, but Solomon, when it came to what he had to say on subjects of wisdom, you would be wise yourself to pay attention. One of the things that Solomon said about it was this. He said, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. We have an opportunity every day to do something with our lives. Now, one of the things I hear people say a lot that I guess it bothers me just a little bit is that they would do more with their lives. But here's one of the excuses that's used. Well, I would, but I don't have I don't have time. I don't have time. Well, wait a minute. Nobody can say they don't have enough time, because every single one of us, God has seen fit to be totally fair by giving us exactly the same number of hours, minutes, and seconds in our day as everybody else. You got just as much time as anybody else does. Now, if you have chosen to fill your day up with something that's unproductive or unhelpful to you, well, that's your choice. But don't say you don't have enough time. You got just as much time as anybody else does. People that are happy are moving towards something. They're moving towards a goal. They're doing something that has meaning, that has purpose, that makes some difference. I don't know what'll be said about me after I'm gone. I really don't worry about it, I tell you the truth. But I do think about that. You see somebody's tombstone. And typically a tombstone, you know, it has a name on there, and then it has a birthday and a date of death, and it has a dash in there in the middle. A dash. And I often have thought, is that the best way that we as a people can represent the lives of people that mean something to us? Here's that dash. There's their life. Dash. Dash. I don't know what they're going to put on my tombstone. I hope it's not a dash. I hope it's something. Something that you know, I hope I'm remembered for something. Hopefully something good. But I hope I'm remembered for something after I'm gone. That my life had some meaning, some purpose, and that I didn't just live and die and dashed in the middle. Let me share one more with you. Five secrets of happiness. The fifth one is happy people have a habit of living in the right now. And that's pretty important. I'll tell you why. It's real easy for us especially as conscientious Christians that we are, it's real easy for us to spend a lot of our lives looking backwards at all the water that's gone under the bridge and things that's already happened that we can't help, things where we have failed, things where we have been disappointed, things where our lives have gone off track in some way that we wished it hadn't have gone off track. That can become like an anchor around our necks or an albatross to us. It can hold us back from doing anything productive much now if we just constantly are obsessed about past failures and mistakes. Now, by the way, and I think we will have an opportunity to do this, we're going to talk in just a few minutes about the five thieves of happiness. And one of those five thieves of happiness that we're going to find out is that when we focus on the past, not only whether our mistakes or somebody else's, that will rob us of our happiness in the present. And it's a bad idea. I think about one of my favorite movies, if not, I guess, the favorite movie. Dad and I seem like over the years we get together about once a year, and if we're going to be together for the whole day, nearly always we break it out and have to watch it. Lonesome Dove, you know. If you ever come over while we're watching it, you're going to have to sit through me and him as we quote it as it goes. That's just part of it. You know, it's part of the ritual. But anyway, we do have it down pretty well.
We hear it all time.
Do you hear it? Okay. All right. Whether you want to or not, don't you? Yeah, and you get to watch it in between times. Well, that's you know, in for a penny, in for a pound, right? I think about Gus McCrae. Yeah, you know, Woodrow. Now, see, Woodrow and Gus are just opposites. You got, and they're kind of like the Stoics and the Epicureans that Paul talked to in Mars Hill. But that's another lesson.